You're listening to The Freedom Message with Stephen Vincent live on bbsradio.com. Thank you for listening in. The number to call into the show is 877-270-8714, 877-270-8714. I'm looking forward to receiving your calls today. We do have a special guest for you. We will have on for you shortly within the next few minutes, Mr. David Brody. And David Brody is a journalist for the Christian Broadcasting Network. And Mr. Brody has written several positive articles, open-minded opinion pieces on his CBN blog lately. And I thought it would be interesting to have him on, particularly since he was in attendance today at the press conference at the National Press Club put on by the Ron Paul campaign to discuss the status of campaign financing, not only of the Ron Paul campaign, but of the entire Republican field. And they did put on a pretty compelling analysis of the campaign finances of all the majors and come to the conclusion that Ron Paul is essentially in third place in campaign financing when you look at it through the lens of some what I think are certainly rational criteria, therefore placing Dr. Paul in what is often referred to in the establishment media as the first tier, you know, that coveted first tier. Well, right now we're saying we're in it. So we're going to have Mr. Brody on in just a moment here to comment on that, what his impressions were of that analysis, and his overall impressions of the Ron Paul campaign and the campaign in general. There will also be, I will play for you the press conference audio following that. Now, I just want to comment myself that I think that this was an excellently timed press conference because the noise, the reaction to the original announcement of $5.1 million raised in the third quarter had started to die down. As I reported to you yesterday, the National Public Radio, in their roundup on campaign financing, failed to mention the amazing $5.1 million raised by Ron Paul in the third quarter, and what a bombshell that was. And also in Yahoo News, in their roundup, totally failing to mention the Ron Paul campaign again. So this is a very adept timing on the part of the Ron Paul campaign to put this back in front of the minds of the general public and the press. So I'm told that we do have Mr. David Brody on the line now. David, are you there with us?
I am, Stephen. How are you tonight?
I'm doing very well, and how are you?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Well, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day. I know it's late in the afternoon there in Washington, D.C., and you want to be home with your family and dinner, but you're taking some time to speak with us, and we really appreciate that.
Well, nothing like rush hour in Washington, dude.
Are you sitting in your car on your cell phone now?
I'm about to. I've been stuck in traffic here.
Oh, okay. So, well, then you got a few minutes to kill. Well, why not kill them with us, right? Well, thanks so much. So tell us, you were today at the National Press Club at the press conference put on by the Ron Paul campaign. Why don't you just paint a picture for us about what you heard and saw there and give us your opinion on the analysis presented by the campaign?
Sure. Well, it was pretty strong analysis. I mean, the bottom line is what they're saying, and they have the numbers to back it up, that clearly Ron Paul is in the top three when it comes to net campaign cash on hand to spend going into this fourth quarter. And so it's pretty clear that he's got at least $5 million in the bank ready to go. Now, they're going to discount Mitt Romney's figures based on the fact that he's given, close to $17 million to his campaign. So they'll say, hey, listen, he's in the hole because he hasn't paid that money back. Technically, that's true. At the same time, the Romney folks will have something to say about that. Clearly, they'll say he may have given himself $17 million, but let's also understand that the Romney campaign is ready, willing, and able to spend money at the drop of a dime, excuse the pun. So, I mean, you know, clearly, the Ron Paul campaign team is ready to spend this money. They know they need to spend it on advertising, especially when it comes to radio and television, and they're going to do so. And, you know, one of the key areas they talked about today was New Hampshire. Every state that came up first, it was always New Hampshire. We're going to spend radio and TV money in New Hampshire. And then secondly, I would ask them, well, what is the most important state that you're going after? And they would list New Hampshire, Iowa, South Carolina, and Nevada. And I said, in that order? And they said, you betcha. And so why New Hampshire? I mean, I think we're all pretty clear on why that's the case. I mean, in essence, not to compare Ron Paul to John McCain, but there is a little McCain-esque feel to this in the sense that New Hampshire is an independent-type state. Ron Paul may be able to break through and do well there. And just like John McCain did in 2000 when he won in New Hampshire, I think the Ron Paul team is hoping for the same type of success.
Well, it does certainly make a whole lot of sense. There just is a known libertarian streak in New Hampshire, and we're already seeing that in the local New Hampshire straw polls, which Dr. Paul has won in an overwhelming way in percentages of like 87%. So, it does make a whole lot of sense. So your feeling is that there weren't really any holes in the logic that was presented in the numbers today by the campaign?
I wouldn't say there's a hole in it. Not at all. I mean, I think that they're on pretty solid footing financially. I mean, that's the bottom line. I think the challenge for the Ron Paul campaign, and for Ron Paul specifically and himself, is, well, there's a couple different challenges, but let's start with two of the toughest. One, the perception within the mainstream media that he's not ready for prime time, that the campaign is not ready for prime time. Now, there are Ron Paul supporters, as my email inbox will attest to, if it could speak, it would say, please, please, stop, I get it. I mean, there are emails coming in left and right to the Brody File here at CBN News, all excited about Ron Paul. But the mainstream narrative right now is that Ron Paul, though financially he can play at this point, can he change the perception that he is not ready for prime time? I mean, let's go back to the first debate, and let's remember that conversation, or shall we say, little dust-up he had with Rudy Giuliani in 9/11. Now, Ron Paul makes some coherent points on his side. Rudy Giuliani will say that he makes coherent points on his side regarding the Iraq War. It's those type of initial impressions that begin to give the mainstream media and others the perception that Ron Paul is, quote, out there when it comes to the Iraq War. Now, let me just hold on a moment and say that there is a good-sized portion of the electorate that probably does, to a certain extent, agree with Ron Paul. But the issue really is that within the Republican primary, within the base of the GOP, can Ron Paul convince the majority of primary voters that he's the guy when it comes to fighting the war on terror?
Well,
now, there's a coherent argument to be made by Ron Paul, and he's been doing that. But in a day and age of post 9/11, in a day and age of radical jihad, Rudy Giuliani has clearly cornered the market perception, whether you want to call it reality or perception, he's cornered the market on being the tough guy when it comes to fighting terrorism. So this is something that they're going to have to work on. There's no doubt about it.
Well, yeah, and perception is certainly a key word. And I think that I think it needs to be spoken to, is that Dr. Paul and his campaign and his supporters aren't particularly interested in saying the right things to the right people in order to get elected. They're interested in getting elected to do the right things. The message is the message. We're counting on it to stand on its own and find its mark in the American people, and we feel that that is exactly what is happening. That is why your inbox is being flooded. Your inbox isn't being flooded with people that have known about Dr. Paul for 10 years and have been in his camp for an extensive period of time or are a part of some kind of organization. They're being flooded by people that have been touched by his message of freedom, the freedom message, and have been thus inspired required to action, where that is not forthcoming for any other candidate other than Dr. Paul. So we think the power of the message itself is what's going to carry us to victory. Now, there is an issue of organization, of getting it done in a brass nuts, brass tacks, nuts and bolts kind of way. And that is certainly something that's being tackled literally right now as we speak in the campaign, in the official campaign and in the non-official support campaign. With regards to what we refer to as the establishment media or the mainstream media, we have seen a shift. I think there's undeniable that there has been a shift in the last couple of weeks, particularly since the $5.1 million in the third quarter got announced. And we have been noticing that shift. Go ahead, David. Go ahead and comment.
Well, I wanted to tell you that there's no doubt been a shift. And the reason is because money talks. You know, the mainstream media, and everybody wonders why Mike Huckabee hasn't gotten the traction. I think part of the reason we know is that it's really hard for him to raise money. The mainstream media has always been big on the numbers game, the financial numbers. Well, this time it's working to Ron Paul's favor, and that's why we have seen a shift. So there's an opportunity for Ron Paul and his supporters right now to make a lot of noise. They've been making noise for a long time, but when you have $5 million in the bank, you better make a lot of noise. And that's indeed, I think, what we're seeing right now. So, you know, to the, quote, mainstream media's credit, and I know those words maybe don't fit well with Ron Paul's supporters, but to the mainstream media's credit, they have always said that numbers are important, that fundraising numbers do play an integral part of this equation. And indeed, you're right. We have started to see a shift in the media covering Ron Paul more, not just with live talkbacks, but doing more think pieces, more interesting pieces. CBN News, myself, obviously, I will be doing a interview. This will be my second interview with Ron Paul. I did interview him a few months back. But this one is going to be a very in-depth. We're going to do a 5-minute story with Ron Paul as the vehicle for the story about his candidacy. And I'm going to sit down with him this Sunday in Orlando at the debate. I'm going down to Orlando to cover the debate. And I'll sit down with him for a good half hour or so and talk to him about some of the substantive issues of the day. And after that, we will go around the country and we will look for this Ron Paul mania that's out there. And clearly, it's out there. One quick story. I was on the road about 3 weeks ago covering Rudy Giuliani in California. And there we are at a Rudy Giuliani event in Lancaster, California, in the middle of the Mojave Desert. And what did we see on a street corner in the middle of the Mojave Desert in California? That's right. We saw Ron Paul supporters on the corner. Forget Giuliani, folks. Nowhere to be found. No, it was Ron Paul supporters. This is what we're going to go look for as part of it.
Well, you will find it. I can pretty much guarantee you that on this Saturday past, there were Ron Paul supporters walking for Ron Paul in large numbers in 65 cities across the country. At the same time, Ron Paul appeared in New York, and you noted the, I thought, rather amazing incident when Ron Paul crossed the street to Grand Central Station and was followed by approximately 300 to 500 of his supporters occupying Grand Central Station, and wherein he sort of mounted this podium or the overlook over the Grand Central Station and gave that impromptu speech. It was really, I thought, quite a moment. You did see that video, of course.
I did, and it was quite a moment. And being from New York City myself, I can tell you I know what those streets are like. I know what that Grand Central Terminal was like. And to have a crowd like that marching through both the streets of New York and Grand Central was quite a moment for the Ron Paul organization. There's no doubt about it. Listen, here's the reality. What they need to do, okay, there needs to be a fusion in the Ron Paul campaign for them to be successful. What do I mean by that? What I mean is that you have a lot of grassroots support. You have a lot of online support. You have a building a Ron Paul staff that is building, a campaign that's adding more people. It's imperative for the Ron Paul campaign to fuse it all together, to be able to somehow walk and chew gum at the same time so they move in lockstep so there is some cohesiveness to the bunch. And that was talked about at the press conference today, this idea that they don't want to be the Howard Dean of 2004, where there seemed to be so much groundswell of support, yet everybody was kind of doing their own number. And I think that'll be a challenge for the campaign. They need to be able to do that. But listen, $5 million in the bank is $5 million in the bank, and they're going to be able to play ball. And the last time I checked, no votes were counted yet. Even though a lot of people would like to crown Rudy Giuliani and Fred Thompson or Mitt Romney the winner, there's still a long way to go. One of the things that works in Ron Paul's favor as well is that there's no clear-cut standard bearer for the GOP at this point. I mean, all three, Giuliani, Thompson, Romney, will say they're the standard bearer, though I think Giuliani has a harder time doing that. But clearly there is no standard bearer right now.
Well, I think that you're right. The field is wide open, no matter what the mainstream media wants to do in terms of declaring who shall be the front runner or who shall be the contenders. I think that those days may be behind us with the advent of the internet and with the generalized, basically disgruntled and disgusted attitude of the American people towards the Republican Party in general and just government in general, big government, so that this kind of a campaign, which is springing from the people to the candidate rather than in reverse order, its time has come. And what we feel in the freedom movement, in the Ron Paul support movement, is that we are witnessing a transformation of the body politic in America right now. We consider this to be history in the making, a definitive change in the way politics gets done in America, in a way that is more grassroots and more democratic and less mandated and dictated from above by what we consider to be the bought and paid for establishment media.
Well, I'll say a couple things. One, and this is from the campaign, not from me, but the campaign will say, listen, they need to win something. And have they won straw polls? Yes. Have they won a lot of straw polls? Sure. But at the end of the day, they need to get an uptick in their national numbers and their state numbers as well. To hang at 4%, 5%, 6%, if you want to take it a little up from there, that's fine. But the reality is that they need to start seeing an uptick. How's that going to happen? I think fusion is part of it in terms of making sure everybody's walking and chewing gum at the same time. And the other important thing that they're going to have to do is be able to somehow, some way, get those numbers up and get this perception that's out there changed. And you know, the perception is, and this is straight from, you have a lot of mainstream media folks shaking their heads in disbelief, wondering what is going on here exactly. And they're chalking it up, and you know this, this is not rocket science here, they're chalking it up to the libertarians, who they believe make a lot of noise, and they believe that this is, you know, kind of par for the course, so to speak. And this is the perception. Now, I'm not saying it's reality.
Sure.
Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
I'm simply saying that is the perception that the Ron Paul campaign is going to need to overcome, and they're going to have to do it somehow, some way. Whether it be radio, TV, or another venture.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that there's mixed feelings. If you had asked me a few months ago that whether we would ever turn any of the talking heads in the establishment media in our favor, or even just make them open to Ron Paul and his message, I probably would have said, ain't gonna happen, because they are bought off, paid for. They do what they're told. They say what they're told to say, and forget about it. We're gonna have to do it ourselves, and that's about it. You know, but I've admitted this on the air. I have been proven absolutely wrong. We have had a number of people come out, people like George Will, Joe Scarborough, Tucker Carlson, and there's a substantially longer list that's not coming to my mind at the moment, but quite a number of people have been making increasingly positive statements about Ron Paul and his message and his chances of winning. And no longer is it a universal wall of he doesn't have a chance, a wall of you know, people are never going to listen to what he says, or that he's crazy. Now there is increasingly an openness to the message and an openness to the possibility of Dr. Paul winning. Now, my opinion is that there are elements within the establishment media that, in fact, are so completely and totally bought off that they will just basically toe the party line and report that it's, you know, that the front runner is whoever they're told to say that it is, and those elements will never change. But what we have learned is that it's not a monolithic block of the media, you know, that there's diverse elements within it. Go ahead, David.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, I would say this. You know, well, there are a lot of things to say, but at the end of the day, you know, Ron Paul is making headway. Look at the last debate, the one in Detroit, the mm-hmm. economic debate. Who got the fourth question? I was counting, like Fred Thompson, Mitt Romney, Rudy Giuliani, Ron Paul. There's a reason for that. Ron Paul is not getting 11 seconds at the debate anymore, so to speak. He's getting more time to express his ideas,
and that's important if you looked at
his campaign.
If you looked at the numbers from that debate, though, he actually got the least amount of time of any of the candidates in that debate, which actually was quite upsetting to me, because this happening at a time when the U.S. dollar is crashing, when gold is surging through the roof, when the whole fiat paper debt bubble is coming unglued nationally and internationally, when that ought to be the topic of the day. And the only candidate on the American political scene today who has been talking about these issues at all, and I should say for 30 years, was not front and center in that debate as he should have been, and those topics were not even brought up. To me, that was just a disgraceful excuse for a debate on financial and economic affairs.
Yeah, well, you know, and let me just transition to another affair, which is back to the Iraq War and fighting radical jihadism. You know, there is a school of thought that Ron Paul has an uphill climb in this area because, in essence, he is basically saying, listen, let's get boots off the ground there. We don't belong there. We should get out. And we never had any business there in the first place. I mean, that would be, I'm assuming you would agree with that statement, right?
What statement again?
Yeah, the statement basically would be Ron Paul's position on the Iraq War is basically no reason to be over there.
Right.
There should be no boots on the ground over there. We need to pull out. We should never have been there in the first place, correct?
Pretty much.
All right. So because of that, you know, in a post-9/11 world, he has a challenge ahead of him, because the reality is, and this is the reality, is that there is a consensus in this country, whether it be 51% or take your choice, take your pick on what the percentage is, but there's consensus in this country that there is a form of radical jihadism and they're coming to, quote, get us. That's the prevailing thought right now. Now, how you fight it is another matter, but the idea here is to, quote, take it to the terrorists. That's what Bush wants to do. That's what Giuliani's talking about. That's what Romney's talking about. So how do you fight that? And I think, you know, you don't want to come across, quote, soft on terrorism, and yet you want to stick to your principles as well. And I think that's the challenge that Ron Paul is going to have to overcome, because he's swimming upstream on that. And I think that's something that, you know, the last thing I think the American public want right now is someone that they at least view as weak on terrorism. Now, I'm not saying it would be weak on terrorism. I'm just simply saying that there is a feeling in this country that we want a president that would be strong in this area. And so I think it's upon Ron Paul and the campaign to explain why he would be strong in this area.
Right. Well, I mean, yes and no. I'm not sure I 100% agree with you, though I certainly see what you're saying. First of all, the consensus is a manufactured consensus that you know, has come from through the propaganda mill from the government into the media and out to the public. So that's a manufactured consensus. And I don't perceive that it is in any way a unbreakable or a monolithic consensus, because I do think there is a very significant segment of the body politic that is tired of the politics of fear. And Dr. Paul speaks to this frequently, that we cannot act always in this reactive and fearful approach to our enemies. That if we have a problem with our enemies, we need to engage them and find out what the problem is. And that this idea that that these are just madmen and that we're facing this mass insanity on the part of the Arab populations of the world is just a little bit out there, in that there are some agendas behind the generation of that perception and of that fear. And I think a lot of Americans get that on one level or another, and therefore they are compelled by Dr. Paul's message and by his approach to these issues. Look, it's blowback if we think we can go around the world and do whatever we want, wherever we want, whenever we want, and not have any repercussions. We are seriously wrong, and this has been proven definitively that we are completely wrong about that. And if it was wrong to approach the world in that way to begin with, then it's certainly wrong to continue to do so.
Well, I must tell you, I'm looking forward to my interview Sunday with Ron Paul. I'm looking forward to doing this in-depth piece on the Ron Paul mania that's out there to shed a little light on what's going on across this country. I really am looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to hearing it. And I'd just like to know, what is your view of the ideas, the thoughts, perceptions, attitudes of the CBN audience? I don't have my finger on the pulse of the CBN audience and what they think, feel about this Republican race or the contenders within it, or Ron Paul. I'd be interested to get your feel about that, and also just maybe a little preview about the kinds of things you might be asking Dr. Paul in your interview.
Sure. Well, when you're asking me about the Republican race in general from CBN viewers' standpoint,
sure,
or Ron Paul?
Both.
Okay. Well, a couple things. On the race in general, it's, as been reported accurately by the media, mainstream media out there, that it's a mixed bag. Once again, no clear consensus. I mean, you have a lot of Mitt Romney folks calling in, emailing into the Brody file at CBN News, talking about their support for Romney and that the Mormonism issue should not be an issue. You have loyal Fred Thompson folks who, quite frankly, have been thrown for a loop on the marriage issue. They didn't like Fred Thompson's stance on that, but understand it from a federalism perspective. You have a lot of Mike Huckabee fans out there who believe he's the compassionate conservative, the one that can really unite the country, so to speak. So I think you see a lot of that. And then with Ron Paul, as you might imagine, I've received quite a few emails into my inbox from Ron Paul supporters. But beyond that, I think there's a debate within the evangelical community regarding the just war theory. And, there's two schools of thought on that, and this isn't a time necessarily for debate on that, nor would I want to get into a debate on that as a journalist. But there are two schools of thought on that, and that is playing out through some of the, where the CBN viewers email in as well. So it's a mixed bag, Stephen, as we like to say. And as for Ron Paul on Sunday and what we'll be talking about, a myriad of issues, including a lot of what we just talked about now, but some of his views on the issues. We'll talk about the Iraq war. We'll talk about the just war theory. We'll talk about the mainstream media. And we'll talk about what's most pressing right now in this country, where he wants to take the country, and how he fights the perceptions that are out there about him and the campaign, and how he breaks through. It'll be fun. Looking forward to it.
Yes, I'm very much looking forward to it. I think that you're open-minded and perceptive, and I'm sure that your interview is going to uncover some new ground and give Dr. Paul some opportunities to maybe flesh out some themes that he hasn't had a chance to fully present to the public. So I do very much want to thank you for that. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think we pretty much wrapped it up. Just to say that, Ron Paul has gone from a guy, quite frankly, that most people weren't paying attention to a guy that people are now paying attention to.
Yeah.
And that's success for now. Ron Paul supporters clearly believe they can take it to the next level, and that is something to watch out for in the next couple months. Can he do it? Everybody thought Mike Huckabee would be the guy after the Iowa straw poll. He's had a hard time raising money. If Huckabee starts to raise money, then there could be another entry into this race, so to speak. But right now, Ron Paul has the money to do something with the message that he wants to send across this country.
Absolutely. Well, the next level is definitely the theme. As a matter of fact, you might enjoy going to my website, www.ronpaulfreedommessage.com, and checking out my latest video blog, which is actually entitled The Next Stage. And it's a discussion and a proposition about how we might actually combine all of this sort of grassroots enthusiasm and the ability of the grassroots to create broad awareness of Dr. Paul and his message with grassroots, nuts and bolts, organized, get-out-the-vote efforts. So you might enjoy checking that out. Well, David, I do want to thank you so very much for taking your valuable time and speaking with us today. I hope it won't be the last time. We'd love to have you on again. And good luck with that interview with Dr. Paul. I am very much looking forward to seeing it. Now, when will that? How will that be available? When will that be available? Just broadcast? And then it's going to be
The interview will most likely be up the next morning on Monday morning, which would be October 22nd. That's what we're shooting for. The interview takes place on the 21st. When I say the interview will be up, what we typically do, we don't like to put huge 30-minute files up on the internet, so we usually break it down into certain answers that he's giving on certain topics. So we'll most likely break it down on the internet, maybe have 3, 4, 5 different entries, quite frankly, that I'm selecting that would be most interesting. We will probably not put the full interview up, only because, you know, it's somewhat cumbersome. But that'll be some of our internet rollout. And then after that, within the next, sometime in the month of November, probably mid-November or so, we will have accumulated a piece on Ron Paul, about a 4 or 5 minute piece that we will air on the 700 Club across the country, which the 700 Club is available at 10 a.m. on the ABC Family Channel across the country. And you can watch that. And that will encompass not just the interview, interviews with some of the Ron Paul supporters, some of the, quote, Ron Paul mania that's sweeping the country, and a look at a broader piece about, you know, can Ron Paul make a huge difference?
Sure.
Here, and what the
heck? Could I ask him a small favor, David? Perhaps we could reframe this not away from Ron Paul mania, because if you take some time and actually go into a Ron Paul crowd, so to speak, and meet and introduce yourself to the Ron Paul supporters and get to know them, you're going to find something really interesting, that they are the most intelligent, perceptive, thoughtful, really the best of America. Really, truly, you know, they're not maniacs in any way, shape, or form. They're kind of crazy about Dr. Paul.
I think when I was referring to Ron Paul mania, mania in a very positive sense, in the sense that, how do I phrase it? Mania in the sense that there's a zest, there's
sure.
a zeal, there's a fervent excitement within this movement, so to speak, that you don't really see as much in other campaigns. Now, having said that, I think you're right. I think there's a stereotype of mania being a little out there.
Yeah.
And so I think we will not be using those terms as we move forward.
I'd appreciate that very much. Because we feel unfairly have to fight this this perception that has been fed by many in the establishment media, that we're the crazies, you know, we're just kind of like, woohoo, you know, out there. And in fact, it's just really not the case. It just really isn't true.
That's something that the campaign needs to be aware of,
yeah.
And that's something that the Ron Paul supporters need to be aware of. If it's not true, which clearly you're saying it's not, and I'll start to obviously experience that for myself as I explore the story. But since that's not the perception, since that's not the reality, but it may be the perception, that's something the campaign needs to focus on and start to change that and work at it as the mainstream media starts to tell a different narrative of the story.
Sure, absolutely. Well, again, thank you so much. I won't take any more of your time. I know you're busy, and we're going to go ahead and let you go. And good luck with everything, and let's keep in touch.
Thanks, Stephen. All the best.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye now. So we have David Brody of the Christian Broadcasting Network, CBN. And you can go to, I believe it's cbn.com, and he has his own page there, and you could read the latest entries, the Brody Files. The Brody File, it's cbn.com/cbnnews/blogs/Brody File. And I recommend that you read his pieces. They're very thoughtful. They're very insightful and balanced and fair and refreshing because, you know, we're frequently kind of fighting this uphill battle in the public perception and the perception that is fed by many, many, not all, many in the establishment media. So let me go ahead and play for you the audio from today's press conference put on by the Ron Paul campaign regarding the GOP fundraising.
Good morning, and thank you for coming. I'm Ken Snyder, chairman of the Ron Paul 2008 presidential campaign. The fiscal condition of an organization is a revealing indicator of the health of an organization. This is especially true of a political campaign. The third quarter recently ended, and the presidential campaigns have filed their reports with the Federal Elections Commission. What do the numbers tell us about the Republican field? As you will soon see, Ron Paul is steadily advancing and now holds a top position among all Republican candidates. The number that might surprise you is the net primary cash on hand. Jonathan Bidlack, the fundraising director of the Ron Paul campaign, will explain. Jonathan?
Thanks, Ken. Good morning. Thank you all for coming. The reason we're here today is because on Monday, the Republican presidential candidates were required to file their financial reports with the Federal Election Commission. As Ken alluded to, the information that's contained in these reports can provide us with valuable insight into the overall health of the candidate's organization and its potential political viability moving forward. Unfortunately, sorting through all the information, as we know, is not as easy as it should be, so I'm going to step through the recent reports for the candidates and explain each of their situations in a little bit more detail. Now, there's one fundamental question that you want to ask when you look at these reports, and that is, how much money does each candidate have available to spend during the primaries? So the first number that the FEC reports is, and therefore should be our starting point, is the total cash on hand at the start of the filing period, in this case the third quarter. This number represents the total amount of money that a candidate has in the bank that they can use to pay for future campaign expenditures. The problem with this number, though, is that it includes not just money that can be spent towards the primary, but also in the general election. So if we really want to compare one candidate's viability against another candidate, what you need to do is strip out the general election money that they've raised and look at the money they have on hand solely for primary purposes. So, for example, in the handout that you all have, if you look at Mr. Giuliani's third quarter filing, in line one, you'll see that he reported in his FEC report raising $18.3 million in cash on hand at the end of the second quarter. But if you look in lines two and three, you'll see that $3.7 million of the money that he reported being on hand can only be used for the general election. Therefore, Mr. Giuliani actually only had about $14.6 million at the start of the quarter to be spent during the primaries, seen in line four. Of the Republican candidates, both Mr. Giuliani and Mr. McCain have initial cash on hand numbers that are inflated due to their inclusion of general election only money. So the starting point that you want to take is the numbers you see in line four. Now, once we know how much each candidate has to start with, the next question is, well, how much did they raise during the third quarter? These numbers are found in line five. So again, we have the same problem here that candidates report raising the money that they've raised for the general election in addition to the money that they've raised for the primaries. So you'll see the earmarked money for the general election in line six, and you can subtract it out to get the primary only money that they raised during the last quarter in line seven. So, for example, if we look at Mr. McCain, he reported raising $5.7 million in the total in the third quarter, but $480,000 of that can only be used for the general election, if he makes it to the general election. Therefore, Mr. McCain actually only raised $5.3 million for the primaries this quarter, an amount that is actually slightly behind Congressman Ron Paul. Line 8 in our press packet just takes the each candidate's primary money at the start of the quarter and adds to it the amount that they raised during the quarter for primary purposes. Now, the next factor that you want to consider is how much each candidate spent during the third quarter, and these numbers are found in line 9. So you can see here, Mr. Romney, for example, spent significantly more than the other candidates in the race. He spent $21.3 million, which is in excess of the $18.4 million that his campaign took in. Mr. Giuliani, by comparison, also took in less money than he spent in the third quarter, taking in $11.6 million, which you see in line 6, and spending over $13.3 million in line 9. So we then need to subtract out the amount of money that each candidate spent. And doing so results in the number you often see given, which is the primary cash on hand at the close of the quarter, which is shown in line 10. The catch that a lot of people tend to not consider is that you also, if you really want to have a true measure of each candidate's financial viability and financial strength, you need to factor in how much debt each campaign has also chosen to take on. So I list outstanding debt for each candidate in line 11. As you can see, only two candidates, Dr. Paul and Mr. Brownback, did not take on any debt this last quarter. In contrast, Mr. Romney loaned himself an additional $8.5 million, which on top of his loan from the second quarter, which he has not paid back yet, means that he has $17.4 million in outstanding debt, well, significantly more than any other candidate in the Republican field. Now, because this debt needs to be paid back in the end, you want to subtract it out from the primary cash on hand that you see in line 10. And so doing this deals with what I'm calling the net primary cash on hand at the end of the third quarter. This number gets at the answer to the question that I posed at the very beginning, namely, how much money does each campaign have to spend in the bank to spend at the during the primary election cycle once they've paid off all of their outstanding debt? And so you'll note on the sheet, we order the candidates in terms of their net primary cash on hand. Rudy Giuliani leads the Republican field with $11.4 million. Craig Thompson is in second with $6.4 million, while Dr. Paul is just a hair under $1 million behind Mr. Thompson. Dr. Ron Paul has over $5.4 million in cash to be used during the Republican primaries with no current outstanding debt. You can see here that Dr. Paul has more net cash in the bank than the remaining six candidates combined. After Dr. Paul, Mr. Huckabee ranks a distant fourth with $600,000 in the bank, while both Sam Brownback and Duncan Hunter have less than $100,000 in the bank. In the bottom tier, Senator John McCain's campaign, based on the financial numbers, appears to be effectively bankrupt. As you can see, Senator McCain currently has $1.67 million available to spend during the primaries, but he has $1.73 million in outstanding debt. This leaves him with a $53,000 shortfall that needs to be made up. In other words, if Senator McCain were to decide today he was going to stop running for president and cease his campaign, he would still need to find a way of raising an additional $53,000 to pay off the remaining debt that his campaign currently has taken on. Finally, ranking last in the sheet is Mr. Romney. While his FEC filing shows that he has $9.2 million currently in the bank, when you take his debt into consideration, his campaign is actually over $8 million in the hole currently. It's particularly interesting to note that when you take out his $8.5 million loan that he gave to his campaign this quarter, Mr. Romney actually spent over $11.5 million more than he raised during the quarter. So I think the picture that you want to come away with when you look at the numbers is that three campaigns have clearly distinguished themselves as being financially healthy and solvent. And those are the campaigns of Mr. Giuliani, Mr. Thompson, and Dr. Ron Paul. Additionally, Mr. Romney, while his campaign is in very poor shape financially, he's able to compete with the other first-tier candidates so long as he continues to be willing to contribute his own personal wealth into his campaign. Beyond these four candidates, however, there really appears to be no one else else in the field who has the financial resources to make a reasonable and a serious run at the Republican nomination. So with that, we open up to questions.
So there you have it. A reasonable analysis of the campaign finances of the Republican field does seem to reveal that the Paul campaign is in the first tier, only behind two other candidates. And when you consider, now this is basically measuring what's available to actually fight the fight in the primaries, behind Giuliani, barely behind Thompson, would be Ron Paul campaign in third place. If you're measuring the actual funds that are available to actually spend on the primary, Romney is apparently in the hole, $8 million, because he owes himself about half of what he of his so-called fundraising has come from his own pocket. So it's really quite an interesting analysis, and I encourage anybody to plumb into it more deeply by going to ronpaul2008.com, and you can find the page where there is a breakdown and some charts of this analysis. So again, I think a really important thing that they decided to release this information at this time to put the fundraising issue back on the front burner, since it apparently has kind of cooled down a little bit in the last few weeks. Now, there were a couple of recent interviews with Ron Paul in the major media, so I'll go ahead and play some of that for you. Let's see, we do have for you, let's play his comments here on, well, let's play the Fox and Friends interview for you first. Okay, this is with Ron Paul on Fox and Friends this morning, and here we go, rolling.
Dark Horse presidential hopeful has mastered the art of the internet, bringing in millions through online donations. Joining me from Washington, Republican presidential candidate Congressman Ron Paul. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
We have a lot of viewers who are psyched that we finally have you live on the show, because we get a lot of emails of supporters of Ron Paul, and that is where you have found your base, right?
Yeah, really, unless they found me, I think it's more like that, because we offered a program and a political position, and the young people especially and the internet has found us, and we're very delighted because our numbers are growing. We have a lot of volunteers. We have over 1,000 meetup groups, and the fundraising has gone very well during this campaign through the internet.
It's amazing, because you did raise $5.4 million in the third quarter, more than two times what you raised in the second quarter. That's a lot of dough, and yet you stay at about 4% in the polls.
Yeah, I mean, we've moved up. It was 1, then 2, then 4, and yesterday it was 1 with 5, so we are going up. The big question is do we have enough time? Because we are growing exponentially, both in number of volunteers as well as the money. But, you know, they're moving these primaries up, so there's a race going on. But we're in pretty good position. I think we have the third amount of cash available.
Right.
The primaries are going to start, you know, here shortly. But we're in pretty good shape, especially for those very early ones in New Hampshire and also Iowa. So we're optimistic, but we know it's an uphill fight.
Congressman, earlier on the show, we had breaking news and exclusive here with the governor of your state, Governor Rick Perry of Texas. He is endorsing Rudy Giuliani. How does that make you feel?
Well, probably not too surprised and a little bit indifferent about it because, you know, the party is a broad-based party. We have the liberal side, and then we have the social conservatives and the traditional constitutionalists, and that's the area that I represent. Now, Mr. Giuliani represents the other side, but we don't want to be exclusive. I mean, I'd like to build the party, which I believe I am, from the young people, and the college kids are flocking to our campaign by offering this traditional conservative, very limited constitutional approach. So I think that it's understandable, and I think that we don't want to chase people out of the party, but I think our wing of the party is alive and well, and I think I can show that the number of people joining us are probably greater than those who are joining the big spenders.
Here's another interesting factoid. A study by the Center for Responsive Politics found that you received more money from military members than any other GOP candidate, and the reason I find that fascinating is because you are the only GOP presidential candidate who is calling for the withdrawal of troops from Iraq immediately.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes unfairly they challenge us because we take a different position. We take the traditional position that you should only go to war under declaration and win them and get out. And I've taken the position of President Bush when he ran in 2000 of a more humble foreign policy and no nation building. So some people say, well, that's weak for the troops. But it really isn't. It's protecting the troops. I want them to come home. And the fact that we get the money from the military more than all the other Republicans put together is a pretty darn good endorsement. I've been in the military. I've been in 5 years, so I believe in a strong national defense. It's just that I have a disagreement on the foreign policy.
Congressman, you like to bring issues to people that sometimes they're surprised when they hear your answers and your stance. Is that your trademark?
Well, I think that's sort of sad because I come from the Constitution, and when they're surprised, that means they're not quite aware of what Article 1, Section 8 says, and that's sort of a shame, but I'm glad if they notice it. Even if they are surprised, they can go back and read it. It is in the Constitution.
Congressman Ron Paul, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And, of course, we can see you and catch the other GOP candidates during the debate this Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. That is in Orlando, Florida, right here on the Fox News Channel.
So there you have it. I'd like to comment on Dr. Paul's mention of our wing of the party. I like that, and I'd like to hear more of that. I'd like to hear him talk about our wing of the party. Why not? We have a wing of the party. Let's establish that. Let's keep that theme in play and, you know, really ride that, because they tried to place us outside of the Republican Party. And I think that Dr. Paul's theme that, in fact, the current leadership of the Republican Party is outside of the Republican Party in the sense that they are really not in alignment with what it has traditionally meant to be a Republican, if you really look at the historical roots of the party and what it's supposed to represent. So let's keep that thought in mind as we speak with people and as we spread the freedom message. There's also another interview on another Fox network, Ron Paul on the Fox Business Network from yesterday. I'd like to play that for you, so here it goes.
About that and many other topics, a man who's no stranger to the internet. He has built a considerable buzz for his presidential campaign online. Republican Congressman from Texas, Ron Paul, is with us now. First, let's get your reaction, Congressman, to this internet tax. What if it isn't abolished?
Well, I think it would be horrible. We don't need to be taxing the internet, so I'm always glad, at least for the extension, but I would agree with Sununu, we ought to make it permanent. I'm just disappointed that the taxers in this district, in this city, is always anxious to look for new things to tax. That's the last thing this economy needs.
You know, Mr. Paul, or Congressman Paul, the reason why they're interested in always taxing things is because their expenses just keep going through the roof. Now, other presidential candidates talk about how they're going to cut the budget, but you're specific. You say you'd kill the Commerce Department, you'd kill the Department of Education, you'd kill the IRS for all I know. Be specific. How are you going to kill these bureaucratic behemoths?
Well, you can't do it overnight, and one person can't do it. You have to have a consensus, and if I'm elected president, that means there is a consensus, and the people in this Congress will wake up, and they'll know they'll have to start cutting. But one thing a president could do is change foreign policy. We don't need to be spending nearly $1 trillion a year maintaining an empire overseas. So I would cut back on that and save hundreds of billions of dollars there and not have to throw anybody out into the streets. But we have to change our attitude about the role of government.
Well, you've built a considerable following, Congressman, on the internet. Devotees, I've seen the people out in the street, out in front of my apartment building, chasing your car down the street once. So if you don't get the Republican nomination, you're not in the top of the polls now, would you run as an independent?
I have no plans, no intention of doing that.
Not at all, but even if the Republican nominee is somebody who doesn't in any way conform to the idea of the idea that you have as who should be our next president?
I'd certainly have trouble campaigning for that individual if he supported all the things that I disapprove of, but I also know that we don't have a good democratic process in this country. It's very hard for third parties to get leverage. You spend half your money or more getting on ballots. You can't get into the debate, so that is a very difficult task unless you happen to be a billionaire, and I haven't quite made it
well,
that far yet.
I think you may be referring to Ross Perot, who acted as a spoiler when the first President Bush was running against Bill Clinton for his second term, for Bush's second term. You're saying absolutely positively there is no way that you will run as a third party candidate, possibly be a spoiler for the GOP candidate.
That's the way I feel right now, and it's about as absolute as you can get. But no, it wouldn't be a very good idea. I think it'd be totally impractical. It would be not the kind of thing that I would want to do at all.
But wouldn't that be a huge disappointment to the people who have just poured money into your campaign, who cheer for you at every turn?
Yeah, but they're still fighting in this primary. You know, we're making great inroads. Look at where we are on the finances. There's only a couple that actually have raised money and have money in the bank more than we have. So this campaign is really building. It's still early. So we're going to have all our money. We raised $5.4 million in the last quarter. We have it all in the bank, so we're ready to go for some of these early primaries. And I think that's what we're concentrating on, not assuming that we have to make another choice down the road.
Now, we know you have a foreign agenda, but the domestic agenda, I think, is what really pumps a lot of people up in terms of, as I said before, eliminating all of these bureaucracies that cost so much money and cause all these taxations to take place. How would you go about eliminating the bureaucracies? How would you go about cutting the size of government?
Well, you could cut back as an individual and as a president, but ultimately you'd have to have the Congress to rescind a lot of that expenses, because if you did, then you'd be in this big constitutional fight on why you're not spending the money the Congress authorized. But I think that's the whole purpose of a president, is to be able to work with those individuals in the Congress. You can get a liberal element that would agree with me on cutting back on foreign affairs, and why not get a conservative element that would sustain vetoes on domestic spending.
But Congressman, good luck getting your fellow lawmakers to jump on board with that, because even when the Republicans were in control of Congress, of criticism of people who were in the party, they didn't do that. Regardless, politicians like to spend money, don't they?
Yeah, and I think that's why Republicans didn't do well last year, and I think I was not part of that system, and everybody knows it. In the last 7 years, we've had our opportunities, and we sort of blew it. We kept spending, ran up the deficit. We have more inflation now, and the expansion overseas has been dramatic. So we're suffering the consequences, but right now the people are sick and tired of it and want changes. This is especially what I'm finding on the universities. The campuses are alive and well when it comes to arguing for less government. That to me is very encouraging.
You think there is a libertarian strain on the campuses today?
I think there's a libertarian strain in every American, because all that means is you believe in liberty. It's just that I've had trouble getting everybody to believe in liberty across the board. But who would get up and run for president and say, well, I'm against liberty? Everybody's for liberty, and it just happens that the Constitution, if you follow the Constitution, it's very libertarian.
Yeah.
It's protection of liberty. It's
people are in favor of liberty, but they want everything. They want not only liberty, but now with the CHIP, with the Child's Health Program, and a lot of other entitlements, that hit not just the poor but the middle class and sometimes even the upper class. They want the subsidies in addition to the liberty. You can't have both, right?
Yeah, well, this is what they say, but there's something going on in this country making people realize that this can't continue. Now, young people are saying, how are we going to pay for this? We have to pay for this war. We're not going to get anything out of Social Security. We have to borrow all this money from China. And people are starting to realize that there's payback time, and that's why our dollar's going down. And I talk about this on campus, and I talk about the Federal Reserve and how we develop bubbles. And I'm getting loud applauses on the campuses dealing with monetary policy. And I think people...
Congressman, what would you do about that? What is your plan? To get rid of the Federal Reserve? Or, I mean, how are you going to control the chairman?
Yeah, I'd like to be the third in line. Jefferson got rid of a central bank, and Jackson did. I'd like to be the next one to get rid of it, but that's not going to happen. I'd like to just legalize competition in money, legalize the competition, let gold and silver circulate as true money, take off capital gains taxes and sales taxes, let people settle their disputes in a new currency. We have parallel currencies around the world that fluctuate every single minute of the day in value. We could have a domestic competing currency, and people who want to save in gold bonds instead of government bonds, maybe they'd think that's a better way to save.
You know, it's interesting.
Education.
We had Alan Greenspan on, the former head of the Fed for about 20 years yesterday, and I asked him, I said, well, perhaps we don't need the central bank anymore in the United States. And he said, you know, that's a good question of whether or not. So even Alan Greenspan is leaving the question open. The real question knows how you would do it, how you would transfer the system we have now to one without the Federal Reserve Board.
You know, I'm glad to hear that about Greenspan, because that's where he originated from, the libertarian anti-Fed position, so he's going back to it. No, you have to develop the transition. And then eventually the next step would be to prohibit the Fed from monetizing debt. This is the real evil. The politicians spend for war or welfare, and they don't have to do it responsibly. They do tax and they do borrow, but ultimately...
So let me just stop you right there. The point, when you say monetize the debt, you mean they would only be able to spend the cash that they had on hand. They couldn't write any checks for which they don't have in their account any money.
And that is the key to it, because when the Fed comes along and there's starvation for capital and liquidity and the politicians are spending too much, the Fed can create $20, $30, $50 billion in a day, just like they did for trying to bail out this housing bubble crash, you know. So they create money out of thin air endlessly. Eventually, that has to stop, because that drives the value of the dollar down, and this is why we get into these problems.
Congressman, really quickly, I wanted to clarify something. Did you say we need a new currency? New currency, like get rid of the dollar?
Well, I want a competing currency. I think, what is the dollar? Nobody can even define it. The dollar used to be defined as a weight of gold, so there is no definition. I would allow a new currency to operate in parallel to these Federal Reserve notes that have no value, and you print them out of thin air. I want true money, which is the Constitution says only gold and silver can be legal tender, and allow that. It's the return to the old money, which was legal at one time.
All right, Congressman Ron Paul. By the way, we're going to see on Sunday night at Fox. You knew that, right? You're going to be on the debate on Fox News, moderated by our own Britt Hume. That's Sunday night at 8 p.m. Congressman, we'll see you there, but we thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you.
So, you may have noticed I didn't comment on any of these last two clips. And that's because, largely, I'm very comfortable with both of them. And that's refreshing, because as you've been listening to my show, you know that I have a tendency to stop and comment when I hear something I don't like. And I found both of these interviews to be generally, you know, I could be picky, but I mean generally fairly balanced. They did not have lots of underlying assumptions that they were trying to impose on Dr. Paul. I didn't feel that they were trying to put him in a box the way interviewers frequently do. I don't think the interviewer in the first clip, the Fox and Friends clip, would have the ability to put anything in a box, but this pair here in this interview on the Fox Business Network, I found them to be fair and balanced, and I especially enjoyed the gentleman's openness to discussing the Federal Reserve as an open-ended question. Now, that's not something you hear very often. generally speaking, if the issue comes up at all, Dr. Paul's view that the Federal Reserve is optional, let's just say that, optional, is dismissed out of hand if it's touched upon at all. In this case, it got a serious look and a serious consideration, and certainly an alternative currency regime was discussed and viewed as a possibility. Also of note, during the interview, the lower third had some pretty decent, favorable, non-judgmental comments in the lower third in the text display on the screen. For example, there was the comment that the people are sick, and, Ron Paul, the people are sick and tired and want changes. Ron Paul, there is a libertarian strain in every America. Such comments dominated the screen as the interview went on, and that was a pleasure to see. You know, there was discussion about the size of government cutting taxes and limited government in a positive light. That is, with somewhat of an underlying assumption in the discussion that limited government, less taxes, is largely a desirable goal, and a somewhat underlying admission that there's a problem. We're just spending beyond our means. The government is too big and needs to be limited. Certainly the female interviewer referred to the Ron Paul devotees. I'm not sure if I like that term. That sort of makes him a guru, because gurus have devotees. But in any case, there was an acknowledgement that Dr. Paul has a serious following. And they did try to kind of stick him in the third-party box. Now, this is one of the more common boxes that they want to fit Dr. Paul into. Pretty much every interview, I don't think I've seen one in the last month where they didn't try to stick him into the third-party box, and which means, are you going to? Since basically the underlying assumption, well, you're going to lose the Republican nomination. You're not going to win that. So, therefore, since you do have a substantial campaign, won't you go ahead and run on a third-party ticket? And they continually try to stick him in the box. And I am very pleased with Dr. Paul's response. He responded in a way which he has not responded in prior circumstances like this. He said that no, we will not be running for a third on a third party ticket. I don't think that's a good idea for certain reasons that he outlined, including there's deficiencies in the democratic process for third party candidates, and he stated that that we need to focus on the primary because it's just getting started and we have a real chance of winning, which is really where he needs to take that. When they try to put him in that third-party box, he needs to say, hey, just a minute, we're not even thinking about that because we think we've got a really good shot at winning the Republican primary. He needs to be putting that out there, and he did that this time. Very pleased to hear that shift in his approach to answering that question. Excellent. So, I'd also like to play for you a little piece we have from a rally in New York City. No, I'm sorry, New York, I believe Albany, New York. And this is a News Channel 13, I would assume, Albany, New York report.
Have you heard?
Okay, they're going to make us go through a commercial first, so hold on, I'll let the commercial play, and I'll get you that. Here we go.
Almost 100 people rallied at the state capitol in Albany today, singing the praises of a little-known Texas congressman running for president. News Channel 13 reporter Bill Amden tells us why they're throwing their support behind Dr. Ron Paul. Bill?
but neither his supporters say lack of coverage in the mainstream media is the main reason Ron Paul is drawing single digits in presidential preference polls. Their hope is to get him on New York's primary ballot and then topple Rudy Giuliani.
Jessica Nailwith came to the Capitol from Greenport and then stood with her three-year-old daughter in her arms to explain why she was working for Ron Paul.
Freedoms were taken away as we watched, as we spent money as a country to invade other countries, bankrupting us, putting us at the mercy of the countries that we owe.
Ron Paul! Ron Paul! Ron Paul!
This group of almost 100, some coming from the far reaches of the Empire State, share a common passion for Ron Paul, a Texas OBGYN whose second tour in Congress began in 1997.
Are the people who voted for George Bush in 2000 because of his non-interventionist foreign policy promise that was never realized? A lot of disgusted Republicans are really interested in his message.
Paul's website outlines his conservative small government positions. He opposes the war in Iraq, any control of guns, opposes abortion, wants much lower taxes and reduced spending, and says he never votes for anything not expressly authorized by the Constitution. In New York, his supporters see him as the antidote to Rudy Giuliani in the Republican field.
Can Ron Paul beat Rudy Giuliani on February 5th?
Oh, yeah!
Did Dave Waddle come from behind to win the 800 meters in 1972? Yep. Did David beat Goliath?
Yeah.
Ron Paul's supporters note that he raised $5 million in the last quarter in a grassroots campaign. They consider him fifth in the field of 10 and rising. Bill Lambden, News Channel 13.
Well, all in all, quite a favorable report. Not too much to complain about. Lots of Ron Paul signs displayed prominently on the screen. Lots of shots of Ron Paul supporters showing the diversity of the supporters. And the only thing I would comment on is now we actually hold the opinion that we are third, thank you, third in the Republican field when measured by the analysis of financing. I'd also like to play for you Ron Paul's comments on... This is actually fun. I'm glad. I'm going to end with a couple of fun things for you. First, Ron Paul's comments on Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly. Now, as you know, I have kind of gone off on Glenn Beck a few times in recent reports, and legitimately so, taking his pathetic attempts at slandering Dr. Paul apart on the air, and we're going to go ahead and see what Dr. Paul does with Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly. Certainly more gracious than I would ever be, and that's why he's the candidate. So here we go.
I'm also from South Carolina, and Richard's right, your stock is going up there. And campaigns there, I think probably something you have in common is kind of like herding cats, libertarians and South Carolinians. I was wondering if you've seen any of the stuff that Glenn Beck has been doing where he says that he had you booked on a show and then he pans to an empty microphone and says that you backed out at the last second. It seems like a great opportunity for publicity. Just Monday, he removed his endorsement of Giuliani, and he was asking your supporters to call in, and he wanted to know more.
I have said I'd be on his show. There was a confusion on that particular night, but I have never personally, backed away from something I have promised. There was some confusion between his staff and our staff, but he's on occasion is a demagogue,
Oh, sure.
But I'm willing to go on his show, but he has been pretty discourteous.
Hand.
He's been pretty discourteous. But I my guess in the next several weeks I'll probably go on his show.
Good.
And but it's sort of how often should I go on Bill O'Reilly's show? I don't care what the questions are, what the challenges are. They just let me give them an answer. This idea that you're giving the right, like last time I was on the O'Reilly show, I started mentioning something about history. We don't want to hear about any history.
So that's definitely worth a look, just to see Dr. Paul's. This is, of course, available on YouTube. Search Ron Paul on Glenn Beck and Bill O'Reilly. And it's definitely worth a look for Dr. Paul's expressions as he answers the questions. And certainly a gracious way to approach the way he has been treated so ingraciously by both of those individuals. And I'm going to end for you with something fun. We're going to play a song, campaign song, written and performed by Shelby Lindley. And she is on YouTube. You can find her at That's the Ticket 86. That is her YouTube channel. That's the Ticket 86. Shelby Lindley singing for Ron Paul. I don't know. She looks like she's maybe between 17 and 19. Real cute with braces and real sweet performance of a song for Ron Paul here. And, of course, it's YouTube, so the audio isn't 100% awesome, but enjoy nonetheless. And I will look forward to speaking with you again tomorrow. So remember, visit my website at www.ronpaulfreedommessage.com. You can email me at freedommessage@sbcglobal.net. RonPaulFreedomMessage.com. Also visit my YouTube channel and check out my latest video blog. I look forward to hearing from you. So you have a great night, and I will speak to you again tomorrow. Here's Shelby Lindley with Vote for Ron Paul.
I'm Shelby, and this is my song about Ron Paul. Here it goes.